Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid. Tom Turnwald runs an Ohio millwork company that was started by his father and employs his kids.
I'm in favor of wind farms because I'm committed to attracting talent to our community, and the school districts with wind turbines get resources that can make a huge difference in kids' lives.
Since 2012, an Avangrid wind farm has strengthened the economy and contributes millions to the community each year. To learn more about where energy meets humanity, visit avangrid.com. That's avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the president says he's putting Pittsburgh ahead of Paris and withdraws the United States from the Global Climate Agreement. The months leading up to that remarkable decision, and what happens now? It's Friday, June 2nd.
And admiration for his unwavering commitment to the American people, it is now my high honor and distinct privilege to introduce to all of you the President of the United States of America, President Donald Trump.
On Thursday afternoon, standing in the sunlit Rose Garden behind the White House, President Trump prepared to announce a decision that the international community had anxiously been waiting to hear. For months, the president had been promising to withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord. But whether or not he actually would was a question up until the moment he began to speak.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So, Mike, we are talking before this announcement in the Rose Garden. So we are in a bit of suspense here, trying to understand exactly what the president will do about the Paris Climate Agreement. From what you can tell, when do we first hear Donald Trump talk about the Paris Climate Accord?
Well, I think the most memorable moment is sort of the fall of 2015.
Michael Shear is a White House reporter.
He's interviewed on Morning Joe.
Donald, if you were president right now and you were over in Paris, what is it you would be trying to do on climate change?
And goes into a long kind of rambling answer.
Well, first of all, I think one of the dumbest statements I've ever heard in politics, in the history of politics as I know it, which is pretty good, was Obama's statement that our number one problem is global warming.
Okay. That exposes his real frustration with President Obama at the time and President Obama's position on climate.
I think that his statement the other day that we're going to show them when we meet that we mean business for the future and global warming and climate change or whatever the new term is, because now they have extreme weather. You know, they have so many new terms because the old ones don't work very well. You know, it used to be global warming, and then they had a problem where they had some very cool areas, and that wasn't working. So, you know, they go climate change. Now it's extreme
But also
weather.
Just a deeper frustration and anger about the whole issue of climate change. He sort of dismisses it, sort of all but says, look, this is all a big joke.
So is this before or after Trump formally enters the presidential race?
So this is after, right? This is the fall, I guess November, I think is the right date of 2015. He gets in the race in June of that year. So he's several months into being a candidate.
And why does he decide, do you think, to come out so aggressively against the climate accord at this point in the race?
I was thinking about that. I think there's sort of two explanations. Mm-hmm. One is that much of what animated Donald Trump, especially at the beginning of the campaign, I think he ultimately kind of broadened his reasons for running. But what animated him at the beginning was just an anti-Obama thesis, right?
I think he's the worst president maybe in the history of our country. I think he's been a disaster. He's been weak. He's been ineffective.
He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS.
I mean, you look at everything. Our borders are like Swiss cheese. This man has done such a bad job. He has set us back so far.
I mean, this, you know, there's those of us who think that maybe the whole reason he got into the race in the first place was the embarrassment that Barack Obama had caused him at the correspondence dinner years before. So, I mean, there was a real anti-Obama thing going on. And so to the extent that Obama was the personification of sort of the globe's efforts to combat climate change and to combat global warming, you know, President Obama was at the helm of the United States. The United States was leading this global effort to negotiate this treaty. So therefore, by definition, Donald Trump had to be against it.
Right. That's really interesting. If he's for it, I'm not.
Right.
Well, the world is in turmoil and falling apart in so many different ways, especially with ISIS. Our president is worried about global warming. What a ridiculous situation.
And I think the other part of it is that Donald Trump, he wasn't somebody who had spent a lifetime being a candidate and developing, you know, sophisticated positions that you sort of see lifetime politicians having. Mm-hmm. And I think the way he picked up on some of these issues was by the sort of reaction that he would get, right?
He's got a problem with the carbon footprint. You can't use hairspray because hairspray is going to affect the ozone. I'm trying to figure out. Let's see, I'm in my room in New York City, and I want to put a little spray so that I can, right?
So he goes to a rally, right? And what gets the crowd fired up?
But I hear where they don't want me to use hairspray. They want me to use the pump, because the other one, which I really like better than going bing, 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 and then it comes out in big globs, right? And you're stuck in your hair, and you say, oh, my God, I got to take a shower again. My hair's all screwed up, right? I want to use hairspray. They say, don't use hairspray. It's bad for the ozone. So I'm sitting in this concealed apartment, this concealed unit. You know, I really do live in a very nice apartment, right? But it's sealed. It's beautiful. I don't think anything gets out. And I'm not supposed to be using hairspray. But think of it. So Obama's always talking about the global warming. That global warming is our biggest and most dangerous problem, okay? No, no, think of it. I mean, even if you're a believer in global warming, ISIS is a big problem. Russia's a problem. China's a problem. We got a lot of problems.
For him, it was partly Obama and partly this idea that this was what got a rise out of people.
So at these rallies that you're describing, what did Trump say he would actually do about the Paris Climate Agreement?
So he would call it a job-killing agreement. He would talk about the weakness of the United States, that we were somehow giving up to other countries who were going to take leadership role. He often mentioned China.
China isn't abiding by anything. They're buying all of our coal. We can't use coal anymore, essentially.
China was somehow getting more out of this mm-hmm. than the United States was.
They're buying our coal and they're using it. Now, when you talk about the planet, it's so big out there. We're here, they're there. It's like they're our next door neighbor, right? In terms of the universe. Miss Universe, by the way, made a great deal when I sold it. Oh, did I get rich? That was a great deal. Oh.
Most times when he would talk about it, he would just talk about how bad it was and that he wanted to cancel it.
We're going to cancel the Paris Climate Agreement and stop. Unbelievable. And stop all payments of the United States tax dollars to UN global warming programs.
And he would just say, I'm going to cancel it. That was his sort of catchphrase.
So you're starting to explain this, but what exactly was the case, whether it was ideological or more economical, that Trump was making against the Paris Climate Agreement?
Well, essentially, it was an economic argument. It was the businessman in Donald Trump that said,
well, I think that climate change is just a very, very expensive form of tax. A lot of people are making a lot of money. I know much about climate change. I've received many environmental awards.
The United States' participation in this agreement was going to impose standards for reducing pollution that would be burdensome to American businesses, and that those businesses, the competitors to those businesses in other countries around the world, would not have to meet the same standards. And ultimately, it would be unfair and an unlevel playing field for the United States and the American economy.
So it's very hard on our business. We want clean air. We want clean water. And I feel very strongly about that.
It's interesting. That starts to sound a lot like the same Donald Trump who complained about a trade deficit with China or any number of grievances that he had about an international economic system that he felt was not fair to the United States.
Yeah, I think that's true. And in fact, I think there's a lot about Donald Trump that isn't consistent, and it's hard to find consistency in some of his positions. But this might be one exception, right? He has been consistently skeptical of these big multilateral international agreements. He fundamentally believes that the United States is giving up more than it's getting in those arrangements, and that the United States should back out of those kinds of deals and enter into kind of one-on-one negotiations so that you can hammer out the best terms for the United States.
So then, of course, Donald Trump is elected president. And when it comes to the environment, what does he do once he gets to the White House?
So One of the things that is pretty striking when he gets into the White House is there's all sorts of issues swirling around. We all know them, the travel ban, all that stuff that happens. But kind of in the background, he moves very rapidly to start to try to undo President Obama's entire environmental legacy. So this is beyond just the Paris Climate Accord, but he starts unraveling the Clean Power Plan.
First, today's Energy Independence Action calls for an immediate reevaluation of the so-called Clean Power Plan,
which was President Obama's effort to impose new restrictions on coal-fired power plants and thus reduce the emissions from them.
Perhaps no single regulation threatens our miners, energy workers, and companies more than this crushing attack on American industry.
He, you know, sets about at the Environmental Protection Agency to start gutting some of the regulations and some of the other measures that President Obama had put in to try to reduce emissions, to try to save energy.
Second, we are lifting the ban on federal leasing for coal production. Third, we are lifting job-killing restrictions on the production of oil, natural gas, clean coal, and shale energy.
He takes aim at auto emissions.
The assault on the American auto industry, believe me, is over.
President Obama had tried to ratchet up the efficiency of cars on the road, putting new restrictions on automakers that said they had to meet certain number of miles per gallon.
It's over. Not going to have it anymore.
So, you know, even before President Trump is confronted directly with the question of stay or go in the Paris Accords, there's a whole set of efforts that the president and his administration set in motion that really mean that whether or not the United States stays in Paris or not, it's going to be very difficult to meet the kind of pollution reduction standards that President Obama had envisioned. So in some ways, the ultimate decision becomes less dramatic because he's already moving in these other directions.
So I want to talk about the people around Donald Trump. When he comes into the White House, he assembles a team of advisors that seem really divided on the Paris Climate Agreement. How do these different camps break down?
Right. So you essentially have two different factions that have been fighting from literally day one, because even as we've all been not paying attention to Paris inside the White House, they knew this was coming. So you had Steve Bannon, the chief strategist, and Scott Pruitt, who is the EPA administrator.
Well, Paris is something that we need to really look at closely.
Because have been in the camp that has been literally trying every single day since President Trump was elected.
It's something we need to exit, in my opinion. It's a bad deal for America. It was an America's second, third, or fourth kind of approach.
China to maneuver him to a place where he pulls out of this accord. They're both deeply suspicious of it.
What's your biggest objection to the Paris Agreement?
That America was put last.
They think that being in the accord gives some legal backing to the environmentalists who want the United States to make good on all those promises that President Obama had made. So they argue, we got to make a clean break. We pull out of the accord, then we don't have to do any of this crap that President Obama wanted us to do. But on the other side, you had a whole series of advisors who were more attuned to a couple of things. One, they were more attuned to the environmental concerns. Those are people like Ivanka Trump, his daughter, and Jared Kushner, her husband. But also people who were more attuned to the kind of global diplomatic and commercial reality. So Gary Cohn, the head of the NEC, the National Economic Council, understands the concerns of global CEOs, Apple, Intel, et cetera, who wanted to operate around the world, who do operate around the world, but wanted a consistent set of concerns surrounding the environment and climate. And this helped provide that certainty. And the diplomats, the people in the State Department, Rex Tillerson, the people in the National Security Council, who understood that part of diplomacy, part of building up relationships both with adversaries and with allies around the world means doing these kinds of cooperative things.
It is important that I think it's 190 countries or thereabouts have signed on to begin to take action. I think we're better served by being at that table than leaving that table.
So these folks around President Trump inside the White House understood that abrogating that agreement has the potential to do a lot of damage beyond the climate issue, but just generally to the relationships that the United States has with other countries.
So, Michael, what did the final days, these past three or four days of these deliberations, and it sounds like kind of open warfare in the White House, look like?
Yeah, it really was. You know, it started basically when he came back on Saturday night from the long trip overseas. Mm-hmm. He tweeted out, I'm going to make my Paris decision next week. So that sort of started a kind of clock, or, you know, it was a gun firing at the beginning of a race. And everybody knew that we were kind of in that final stretch. And so from the moment he landed and got back to the White House, there was just a kind of all-out effort by Bannon and Pruitt and those folks on that side to try to keep him where they sort of thought he already was, which was to pull out. And there was a kind of crazed effort by the people who wanted him to stay in to try to lobby him the other way. That kind of culminated on Tuesday, where it leaked out that the president had made up his mind and he was going to pull out. And the moment that reporters started kind of following up on that, myself included, people from the other side started waving their hands and saying, no, it's not done. It's not decided yet.
Wow.
Now, even as, you know, hours before the announcement was to be made, there were people saying, like, look, we sort of know where the decision is now, but we're still trying to tweak the language in the hopes of mitigating it. Their hope was that even as he withdraws, that there would be language that would soothe the concerns of some of the world leaders or some of the corporate leaders who had wanted him to stay in.
Michael, thank you very much. It sounds like you're actually the person covering this. So are you headed to the Rose Garden now?
Yep, headed to the Rose Garden and then to a White House briefing where hopefully they'll give us a little bit more detail about the actual policy and how it rolls out, and then back here to the Bureau to write the story.
The United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord. Thank you. Thank you. But begin negotiations to re-enter either the Paris Accord or in really entirely new transaction on terms that are fair to the United States, its businesses, its workers, its people, its taxpayers. So we're getting out, but we will start to negotiate, and we will see if we can make a deal that's fair. And if we can, that's great. And if we can't, that's fine.
After the break, what happens next? We'll be right back.
What can a painting of Queen Elizabeth I teach us about power? And how did tattoos become both revered and reviled? Hi, I'm Isabella Rossellini, and in the first episode of This Is Not a Beauty Podcast, we'll hear from a top Capitol Hill makeup artist and meet the world's oldest tattooist to understand how beauty shapes politics. Listen now on your favorite podcast platform, brought to you by L'Oreal Group.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times, and they will do it again to protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights. Join the ACLU today to help stop the extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.
Hey, it's John Chase.
And Mari Uehara.
From Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times. Mari, it is gift-giving time. What's an easy gift for someone like under 50 bucks?
So in our Gifts Under 50 guide, we have this super cute palm-sized Bluetooth speaker. It comes in an array of cool colors. It's waterproof. You can bring it anywhere. I want one for my garden.
I love it. Check out all of Wirecutter's gift recommendations for yourself and everyone else at nytimes.com/holiday guide.
So what happens now?
We are leaving.
Shortly after the president spoke in the Rose Garden, I called my colleague Brad Plumer, who has covered global climate negotiations for the past decade.
There is a formal process within the Paris Climate Agreement that allows any country to withdraw. Mm-hmm. That actually takes 4 years.
Wow.
First, you have to give a year's notification. Then it takes 3 years. So we won't officially be out of the accord until November 4th, 2020, the day after the next election. If a new administration wanted to come in and rejoin the agreement, they certainly could, but that's all in the future.
Okay. The president said that he will begin renegotiating this agreement that he is starting to withdraw from immediately. Is that actually something that can be done?
So most likely they cannot renegotiate. We've already seen France, Germany, Italy come out with a statement saying, we're not doing this all over again. We got together in Paris in 2015. We negotiated this big agreement that we're not going back and reopening it up again. And it seems unlikely that the U.S. could offer anything to entice those countries to actually agree to renegotiate the process. They already see that the United States, the Trump administration, is not serious about climate change. And this Paris Climate Agreement was basically structured in a way to accommodate the United States. The United States did not want something that would be binding. And now suddenly they've seen a U.S. president just decide to pull out entirely. So yeah, it really does seem like they're quite upset about this whole thing.
We will succeed because we are fully committed. Because wherever we live, whoever we are, we all share the same responsibility. Make our planet great again.
Brad, you started to answer this by suggesting that foreign countries don't want to renegotiate the Paris Climate Accord with the U.S. But President Trump said that if he can renegotiate this, he wants a deal that is fairer for the United States and ensures that the U.S. doesn't pay more into this deal than other countries.
As president, I can put no other consideration before the well-being of American citizens. The Paris Climate Accord is simply the latest example of Washington entering into an agreement that disadvantages the United States to the exclusive benefit of other countries, leaving American workers, who I love, and taxpayers to absorb the cost in terms of lost jobs, lower wages, shuttered factories, and vastly diminished economic production.
Is that achievable?
I mean, from what the president said, that basically sounds like the existing Paris Climate Agreement, right? It's a largely non-binding, voluntary agreement where the U.S. can propose whatever it wants to do on climate change, and there are no penalties for falling short. That was the whole structure of the agreement. So it's not clear how you could renegotiate the accord to actually reflect what the president was saying. What he was saying basically describes what the Paris deal already does.
So it sounds like you're saying that the president laid out an indictment of a deal that already did the things he says he wants in a new renegotiated deal?
Yeah, and two White House officials had a background briefing after his presentation where a lot of different reporters tried to press them on what would renegotiation mean, what you actually want to push for, what you want to change. And the responses were extremely vague. I'm not sure they have a clear picture of what they actually want.
So the president said that there would be immediate economic benefits for the United States once we withdraw from this agreement, especially for industries like coal mining, for power plants, for manufacturing. You cover this stuff really closely. Does that strike you as accurate?
What you hear from a lot of coal analysts, from a lot of people in the industry, is that there are much bigger issues that they're facing than the Paris Climate Agreement. Coal is getting crushed by cheaper natural gas. It's being affected by domestic regulations. There is nothing about a non-binding agreement that would affect the coal industry much one way or the other. And in fact, you actually saw a lot of coal companies want to stay in the Paris Climate Accords.
We want fair treatment for its citizens, and we want fair treatment for our taxpayers. We don't want other leaders and other countries laughing at us anymore, and they won't be. They won't be. I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
Let me say first, I heard that he was not supporting the Paris Agreement, and I was pretty upset.
And then I started getting a lot of questions about his reference to Pittsburgh.
On Thursday afternoon, not long after President Trump said he was fighting for cities like Pittsburgh by withdrawing from the climate agreement, the mayor of Pittsburgh spoke out. Bill Peduto said, quote, "As the mayor of Pittsburgh, I can assure you that we will follow the guidelines of the Paris Agreement for our people, our economy, and future." And in a rare statement, former President Barack Obama said that the U.S. had, quote, "joined a handful of nations that reject the future." The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, Rachel Quester, and Andy Mills. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Sam Dolnick, Peter Sale, Pedro Rosado, and Michaela Bouchard. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you on Monday.